This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report for Friday, June the 1st, 2007. I am Jay Pierce, in for Todd Gleason, and in a few moments, we'll be talking about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, Lafayette, Indiana. Later this half hour, we'll look at the cash grain market with Bruce Bostert of the Ludlow Farmers Co-op in Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news today, top European Union and U.S. agricultural trade negotiators meet to try to keep the Doha round alive. And it'll be at least October before producers can apply for disaster payments for 2005 or 2006 crop losses. Dave Dickey will have these and other stories this half hour. Todd Gleason takes us on a visit to the historic Hawes Grain Elevator and Museum in Atlanta, Illinois. And state climatologist Jim Angel will join us with the lowdown on Midwestern agricultural weather toward the bottom of the hour, all here on your Friday Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
Well, just a quick reminder of the tornado watch that is in effect until 7 o'clock for an area of southwest Wisconsin, eastern Iowa, and northwestern Illinois, dipping from the Quad Cities down into our severe weather coverage area to include Livingston County up in the Pontiac area. Want to make sure you remember that a tornado watch does mean conditions are favorable for tornadoes and severe thunderstorms in and close to the watch area. So if you're in Livingston County or any of the others where you can hear us that may be outside of our severe weather coverage area but included in it, you should be on the lookout for threatening weather conditions and listen for later statements and possible warnings in some of those counties that perhaps you're listening to us in that are outside of our severe weather coverage area per se would be LaSalle and all the way up through Lee County, Henry County, as well as Livingston that we mentioned. Grundy County is in it and out toward Peoria and then all the way up to the Quad Cities area, and southern Wisconsin and eastern Iowa. Well, here's how some of the prices went at the close today. In Kansas City, July wheat ended up 3.5 at 507.5. September at 522, that was up 5.5. On the Chicago Board of Trade, July wheat closed up 3.75 at 520.75. September up 3.5 at 535.5. And December up 4 at 547. Corn retreating from some higher prices yesterday, down 3.5 on the July contract at 386.75. September 389.5, make that 389.25, down 2.25. December closed at 383, down 1.75. And the December 08 contract down a half, make that up a half at 398.5 on that far out contract. July soybeans closed up 11.25. At 817.5, August also up 11.25 at 824.75, September up 12.5 at 832.5, and November at 847.25 up 11. The July meal up 450 at 221.40, and the oil at 35.81 up 10. Feeder cattle for August at 110.25, down 117.5. June live cattle at 90.80, down 35. August live at 90.67.5, down 80, and the lean hogs for June 74.87.5, down 20. And here to talk about the numbers and what it all means, Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, Lafayette, Indiana. Mike, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Jay.
Well, I guess we saw some pretty good movement on those soybeans today to the
upside.
Yeah,
it was really all about the beans today, wasn't it?
Yeah. What's propelling that?
Well, it had a lot going for it. You know, we did see the corn and wheat give us a real nice push earlier this week, and it seemed like the speculators took more profit in beans because of being an end-of-the-month type market up until today with, you know, us turning the calendar to June. We also saw the chart held up real nicely. July beans yesterday got down to that $8 level, $7.99 level, and popped really nicely on the close. That set some short-term technicals up pretty nicely. Meal was probably the biggie for us that we have had been watching today. A lot going on in meal. I guess word is that Bunge and Danville is shut down right now with some labor negotiations going on this weekend. We had a contact that we phoned into later this afternoon before the close, ask about the cash meal market in another part of Indiana. Sounds like the meal basis has popped about $5 a ton. That meal in general, there's some planned shutdowns, maintenances, and things like that going on, Jay, that's allowed the meal prices to pop very nicely and a little bit of short supply. So the meal saw a quite of active day, and in Chicago, we don't know a lot about it, but around midday, there was reports from our clearing firm that a commercial covered around 6,000 contracts in July meal. That was very surprising for a commercial to do that. We don't know a lot about that. But, again, a lot going on in the meal complex, and that really helped give the beans some needed support because the oil was quiet for once today. So between those things and the Brazilian real made another run higher, and then this weather issue, one thing that I picked up here the past couple days that we've heard from Chicago quite a bit is that the Corn Belt Bean Belt is kind of being defined right now, that if you go east of Indianapolis and south, that's more the Bean Belt, and west of Indianapolis is more the Corn Belt because most of the corn on corn acres are going to happen to be west of Indianapolis, especially as you get into Illinois and Iowa and Nebraska. And so the trade in Chicago is almost at a point where if they see this high ridge coming into the eastern Corn Belt and the Delta, they associate that now with a lot more likelihood of getting bean losses and yield losses due to the hot, dry weather, and then they do the corn losses because they think the vast majority of the corn is out west. And we don't participate in that mindset. It makes sense, but when you've got 90.5 million acres being grown in corn, it can't all just be, you know, west of Indianapolis. But that's kind of what the trade's thinking right now in beans as we go into another very key weather weekend here, and much-needed rain east of Indianapolis all the way to Columbus, Ohio, and down through Kentucky, Tennessee, and the Delta states.
Mm-hmm. The corn yesterday was hitting some 2 months highs, but today has backed off a little. Is that anything, any kind of concern? Is that a technical correction, or what do you see there?
We don't think so because the cash has been the leader in the corn market. We think whenever the cash does the leadership and runs the show that it's probably more of a medium-term trend, and the short-term can have the back and fill and some profit-taking. And the weekly numbers would say that, too. July corn was up 2.5% on the week. July wheat was up 4% on the week. July beans up 0.5% on the week. And so if you knock out today, the wheat and the corn really ran the show this week, and it goes back to those feed grains and what's going on with the global supplies. But, indeed, we did see that these fail at the 100-day moving average here in the corn market. That brought in profit takers, and that really never stopped all day long. July remains above the 50-day moving average. D's corn settled right on it on the close today. So we are watching that in the short term. We may see some continued short-term back and fill, especially if the wheat doesn't really want to get up and go on Sunday night and Monday. But, again, it seemed like the corn was being hit by some bean-corn spreading. We're thinking that's more short-term traders coming back in after they had just gotten out earlier this week on the end-of-the-month deal.
Mm-hmm. And what about the wheat contracts?
Well, the Kansas folks that we have as clients down in those areas are not real happy. They had a very nice crop going up until about 3 weeks ago, but the rains have fallen, and they keep falling. Rust is getting to be an issue. The hail is getting to be an issue. I think the trade has done a very good job of keeping up on the hard red wheat, and the hard red wheat issues have now brought the soft red wheat in Illinois and Indiana up to the surface, and the trade's getting more and more aware that there's fields likely to only harvest about 10 to 20 bushels of soft red winter wheat this June, this July, and, you know, they've done a real good job of factoring that into the price, and indeed we did get up there up against those old highs from this week and tried to post some new ones. Did so, got to 530, but then you saw a pretty good sell-off then after that. I think that was probably needed, and wouldn't be surprised to see the wheat do a little bit more of that early in the week next week, given and barring if USDA gives some real surprises in crop conditions on Monday afternoon.
All right. So if you had a crystal ball and you look toward Monday, what do you see coming up the beginning of next week to start off the first full week of June?
It it's almost like race weekend as far as the weather goes. It looks like almost identical pattern where the one model is looking like it's going to deliver some pretty good eastern corn belt, eastern bean belt rains between now and Sunday night. If that happens, Jay, we'd suspect the beans will probably get hit the hardest. And if that's the case, maybe the corn and wheat want to lighten their loads on the longs too. But again, the medium-term trend would say if the cash stays firm, you know, the commercials will keep buying the dips like they have been.
Mike, thanks a lot. As always, good to talk to you, and we'll talk to you again soon.
You too. Nice job at the radio station, Jay.
Well, thank you much. And it's all because of the fine folks that we have, like Mike Zuzulo and the analysts who join us each and every day in the closing market reports and our pre-opening and opening market reports and, of course, Commodity Week, which comes up tomorrow morning at 11:30. And you can find it all online at willag.org. Well, at the bottom of the hour, we'll talk with Mike Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois Water Survey, about the agricultural weather. Mike Sola reminds us that a tornado watch is in effect for northwestern and portions of central Illinois, including Livingston County, until 7 o'clock. Northern sections in central Illinois will become mostly cloudy tonight with widely scattered showers and thunderstorms. Elsewhere across the two states, partly cloudy. Tonight, lows ranging from 60 in northwest Illinois to 68 in some central Illinois locations. And then tomorrow, partly to mostly cloudy with widely scattered showers and thunderstorms, most numerous in northern and western Illinois, highs ranging from 78 in the north to 88 in eastern Indiana. Tomorrow, the wind speeds will peak at 5 to 18 miles an hour. Minimum relative humidity levels during the afternoon will range from 40 to 60%.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible in part by a grant from Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. For information, call 866-837-9027.
In agricultural news, the top European Union and U.S. agricultural trade negotiators are meeting today in Brussels in yet another attempt to find enough common ground for the Doha round to continue. Today's meeting comes on the heels of a three-day conference among Brazil, the EU, India, and the U.S., which produced indications that at least some agricultural differences are being bridged. Today's talks are focusing squarely on subsidies, market access. In agricultural news, the top European Union and U.S. agricultural trade negotiators are meeting today in Brussels in yet another attempt to find enough common ground for the Doha round to continue. Today's meeting comes on the heels of a three-day conference among Brazil, the EU, India, and the U.S., which produced indications that at least some agricultural differences are being bridged. Today's talks are focusing squarely on subsidies, market access, and sensitive products. If the Doha round is to be finalized by the end of this year, most WTO officials say negotiations must be concluded by August, an outcome made less likely by France's new president, who insisted that nation would veto any compromise that threatened the livelihood of French farmers. It will be months before producers will be able to apply for agricultural disaster payments for losses in 2005-2006 or crops planted before the end of February this year. Farm Service Agency officials say the payments will require new software and new regulations, delaying sign-up to October at the earliest. And FSA Deputy Administrator John Johnson says eligibility requires a 35% loss and proof of insurance.
There is one major difference in this disaster program compared to ones in the past, in that Congress has said this program is only available to those producers who took out crop insurance or coverage under our non-insured assistance program, what we call refer to as NAP for some minor crops and specialty crops. So you had to have some type of insurance in place for your crops in order to participate in this disaster program that Congress passed.
The disaster aid package includes a crop disaster program, a livestock compensation program, and a livestock indemnity program. USDA yesterday lowered its fiscal 2007 agricultural surplus by $1 billion, due in part to weaker-than-expected cotton and corn exports and stronger imports of horticultural and grain products. The new surplus is forecast at $7 billion based on ag exports of $77.5 billion and ag imports of $70.5 billion. ArcHalf USA says the reported sale of the third-largest beef packer in the U.S. to a Brazilian firm signifies the need to immediately reform industry practices. ArcHalf USA CEO Bill Bullard.
This is a new era for U.S. cattle producers where we would have one of the major four packers owned by a foreign firm, which is also the world's largest beef packer. That means on a global scale, we're seeing a heightened level of concentration in our industry, and what the relationship will be between U.S. producers and a foreign firm from a country that covets our U.S. market is going to present a challenge because clearly our economic interests will be different.
And Bullard says U.S. cattle producers just can't win a free-for-all competition with Brazil under current market conditions.
With their herd size of about 200 million head of cattle, they're over twice the size of the United States. So they bear the potential of being a fierce competitor of low-cost beef on the global market. And unless we make reforms in our U.S. market, and particularly reforms that recognize the unique characteristics of the U.S. cattle industry, we're not going to be competing on a level playing field with that country.
Without reform, Bullard says Brazil could drive domestic prices down, resulting in a mass exodus of U.S. cattle producers. Monsanto Company has reached an agreement with the U.S. Department of Justice that allows it to complete its proposed acquisition of Delta and Pine Land Company. Monsanto spokesperson John Raines.
We've been in continual communication with the Department of Justice, and you know, we've said from the beginning that we thought that it could take between 6 months and 12 to reach an agreement with the Department of Justice because of their thorough review of the transaction. So we were very pleased that they made the announcement, and under the terms of the agreement filed in federal court, Monsanto Company, as we've said all along, will divest of its Stoneville Pedigreed Seed Company and related business assets, as well as NextGen, which is the High Plains brand that Stoneville has been selling, will also be divested. So we're going to work very closely with the Department of Justice to close all these transactions as soon as possible.
NextGen, as well as some Delta and Pine Land germplasm, goes to Americot Incorporated. The divestment makes Americot the third-largest cottonseed company in the nation. And Nebraska is encouraging investment in the state's biodiesel industry. Nebraska Governor Dave Heineman has signed into law a new tax credit of up to 30% for investment in a Nebraska biodiesel plant. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
In 1904, a grain elevator was built in the town of Atlanta, Illinois. It was closed in the mid-70s. In the early 90s, a few of the townsfolk decided to save the aging building, and now it's on the registry of historic places in the United States. Todd Gleason prepared this tour of the J.H. Hawes Grain Elevator and Museum with Marge and James Coleman.
The engine came from the Eminence Grain and Coal Company, which is about 3.5-4 miles out of town. And it was restored by Dean May. And he put it back in really wonderful condition. And that's how it got here. Volunteer work has gone in. The bricks in the engine building were all cleaned by volunteers in the cold old days. And we've had a lot of people volunteer their help on laying bricks and carrying mortar and fixing windows, and we have tried to keep it as historically as possible.
Well, I guess we might say it's just we enjoy showing people how it used to be done. I can't say primitive way, but somewhere between primitive and modern day, it was done through houses like this. Well, they stopped on the scale platform with the load originally, and then after they weighed and cleared the scale house, they'd drive on up in here and stop on the dump logs, and they'd trip it and run the load down in the pit, and into the leg, and up in the bin.
The scales came from out in the country, and I was just riding my bike in the morning downtown, and there were four people walking around, and I had a feeling they were had been from here, and I stopped and visited with them. To make a long story short, we came over in the afternoon, and the scales in the scale house was from a farm out in the country, and they didn't know their dad very well because their parents had divorced, and when they looked down in the scales, there was their dad's name with grain that he had brought to that farmer, and he kept all the list of grain and the weights, and I soon saw tears in their eyes. The city hall and the library, when they're open, you can always get someone there to call one of us who have a key to open it and show you around. It's always open during June, July, and August on Sunday afternoons from 1 to 3. But if anybody comes through, most people in town know who to call and get the elevator open. And I ride my bike around a lot, and I've gone home and gotten the key many a time, brought people down here, and I've had a wonderful time showing the elevator.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
And now I've got the phone connection set, and Bruce Bostert joining us from the Ludlow Co-op to take a look at the cash grain markets from out in Ludlow, Illinois. Good afternoon, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
Well, what are you seeing on the basis today?
Well, it has been an interesting week and really a big disparity. Corn basis has been interesting, and bean basis has just been dead. Over the last week since we talked last Friday, SIF bean market is unchanged. The Decatur bean basis is unchanged. We're up a whopping penny at Paxton, so essentially unchanged.
Mm-hmm.
Corn, on the other hand, has been a pretty wild market. We've seen some of that Western Belt strength rolling finally over into the Eastern Corn Belt. SIF numbers went from 36 over the July to 47 over the July, so up a good 11 cents for the week. Decatur numbers were up 11. Our rail numbers here at Paxton are up 10 cents. So not a bad week basis-wise, especially in the face of some pretty good rally days through the course of the week.
Are farmers selling at current prices? What prices are they looking for?
We are buying a little bit out here. We saw a few beans selling on tops. Corn, old crop, no. The farmer has sold higher numbers than this. He's kind of down to the last corn on hand, and I think that's more of a case of time. I don't think I'm going to see a lot of old crop corn move until we get into July and people have the feeling that the crop's made for them.
All right.
So I think it's more of a time factor. Now, new crop, we're seeing a little bit of selling there.
Mm-hmm. And what are you expecting as the week begins next week? We start a new month on a Friday, but the first full week next week.
Well, I think it's going to be an interesting week, and we'll be watching the weather forecasts here. I mean, we can run stuff up and down depending on how much rain we get, and these things have been real spotty, so it makes it hard for the market to get much of a grasp on it.
Mm-hmm. And we'll be talking with Jim Angel in a moment about that agricultural weather. What about your prices today?
In Paxton today, we're at $3.79 for June corn. New crop is $3.54. Soybeans, $7.85 for June, and new crop at $8.16.
Bruce, thank you much.
Thank you.
All righty. Bruce Bostert of the Ludlow Co-op in Ludlow, Illinois. And now joining us with our report of AM 580 News, Jim Meadows.
Thank you, Jay. Good afternoon. State Senator Mike Frerich says he's not convinced that any suggested state revenue plan, including a riverboat casino in Danville, is off the table as budget talks continue in Springfield. Now that their scheduled adjournment deadline has passed, Frerich says he thinks the spring legislative session could go on for some time before a budget is approved. The Gifford Democrat says he voted against a $2 billion gaming proposal that the Senate passed last night. That plan would place four new casinos in the Chicago area. Frerich says he worries that gaming expansion could become a tax on people who can least afford it. Meanwhile, the Danville City Council last night approved a resolution asking state lawmakers to consider their city for a casino license. Authorities continue to investigate potential leads in the disappearance of Naomi Arnett, but a Champaign County Sheriff's Lieutenant says they've suspended their search for Arnett in the Sadorus area for now. Lieutenant Ed Ogle says all wooded areas, waterways, and farmland in and around the Champaign County town have been searched. Ogle says it's most likely that Arnett, who's been missing since May 21st, didn't disappear voluntarily. A federal judge has decided to allow the Cavell International Horse Slaughtering Plant in DeKalb to resume operations temporarily while it challenges a new state law. Cavell filed a lawsuit May 25th, claiming the law banning the slaughter of horses intended for human consumption is unconstitutional. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is working on a plan that would make trapping more expensive on the Upper Mississippi River National Wildlife and Fish Refuge, which runs from Minnesota to Rock Island, Illinois. The agency is seeking public comments on a plan to increase the current $20 refuge trapping fee by $10. Once again, Illinois is threatening to stop giving Indiana a discount when using transponders on Illinois tollways. The state is saying Hoosier drivers would no longer get a discount if Indiana doesn't strike up a similar deal when iZoom transponders debut on the Indiana toll road in mid-June. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
And I'm Jay Pierce with the Closing Market Report, sitting in for Todd Gleason, who returns next week, and sitting in for Steve Hilberg is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois Water Survey. And good afternoon, Jim. How are you?
Good afternoon.
Well, it looks like we have a tornado watch in effect for Livingston County until 7 and some other parts to the north and west over into Iowa and northwestern Illinois, southern Wisconsin with a pretty hefty system. Looks like it's dropping some rain and causing some storms along that. And those are some areas that have seen some rain as opposed to some of the others. But as we look at the whole Corn Belt and the whole growing area, what is it you're seeing?
Well, that's right. We're seeing some pretty severe weather up in the Quad Cities area. And I think over the next couple of days, we have a pretty good chance of seeing thunderstorms throughout the region on through Sunday or thereabouts. Then kind of return to fairly mild weather. Not much rain in the early part of the week there, but generally the highs in the low 80s. Our upper 70s and the lows around 60, which is pretty darn close to normal for this time of year. So I think it's going to be a fairly mild week. It remains to be seen how much rain we'll actually get out of some of these systems. I suspect it'll be kind of hit and miss the way things are kind of setting up.
Yeah, we've had some hit and miss rainfall here and there. You get, half an inch in what seems like a pretty heavy downpour, but it's pretty brief, and they have been pretty spotty. Are there any odds for any kind of more widespread coverage anytime soon in areas that are kind of needing it?
Well, not at the moment. There's not anything that would suggest that we're going to have, like, a widespread, low-pressure system roll through that's going to really drop a lot of rain over us. I think the forecast for the next 5 days, the potential is up to an inch in some places, but it's going to be very much hit and miss. So I don't think you know, we're kind of getting into the kind of time of year where it's more thunderstorm-driven activity than it is the big weather system. So it is going to be a lot spottier.
Mm-hmm. Are there any particular trouble spots? I mean, the Quad Cities today, and we're looking at this, but any other particular trouble spots to be watching for?
Well, the only area that I'm really concerned at this point is southern Illinois. Most of the rest of the state is in pretty good shape when you look at the precipitation over the last couple of months. But southern Illinois, especially south of I-70, has been running on the dry side for the last couple of months. And you get down into far southern Illinois and then across the border into Kentucky, it's starting to get very dry. In fact, the U.S. Drought Monitor has most of Kentucky in abnormally dry conditions. So that's one step away from being in the first stage of drought. So I'm most concerned about southern Illinois at this point.
All right. Jim, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
State climatologist Jim Angel out at the Illinois Water Survey. That's our closing market report. Don't forget Commodity Week tomorrow morning, our weekly analysis of what's happening in agriculture. That'll be coming up at 11:30. And, of course, all of our products are at willag.org.